Hello, and welcome to the Curious Expression podcast. I'm your host, Pinder Singh. Curious Expression is where interesting guests share their knowledge and expertise with the world. In this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Daryl Tanner, or more commonly known as D. Tanner. D. Tanner has spent 30 years in sales and investments in startup businesses. However, his passion has been in the many years working in Christian counseling with youth, young adults, and 30 to 40-year-old single co-eds. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Daryl, for being here. Welcome to the Curious Expression podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, Daryl, for people that don't know who you are and what you're about, can you give us an idea of what you do?
Yeah, I counsel 30 to 40-year-olds, single co-eds, typically that have had issues in their past lives, whether it's been I like to say hurts, habits, and hangups, whether it's addiction or issues in marriage, abuse, neglect, verbal, physical abuse, but just had some kind of trauma in their lives.
And what originally happened in your life, or when did you kind of decide that you wanted to do this kind of work?
Well, I had a daughter that went through a I had been kind of working in the area already, but I had a daughter that went through a pretty a devastating divorce in her 30s. And I realized at that time a lot of the issues that single parents have to deal with, not only continuing to make a living but support their family, but also dealing with an ex and then the money it takes to, just to continue to support your children and how that can impact your life and kind of takes you in a completely different direction when you thought or felt like you were happily married. So
I know you grew up on a farm, so when you're helping the youth, do you feel like your farm life experience growing up kind of helps you kind of give good advice to people? That's a different world, you know?
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to put the chickens in the roost. So I kid a lot of people dealing with a 30 to 40 age group and being they're single, they may or may not have kids, but it's a lot like herding cats. You know, I get a few of them going in the right direction, and then boom, something happens. And it's definitely a weekly activity, sometimes many, many times during the week. So you expect people to show up in group and for just some reason or the other, they don't. And quite frankly, the guys are the worst. The women seem to want, that community, want to be a part of something, want to share, whereas the guys, I just have a tough time, you know, being a guy myself. I mean, I was that age one time many, many years ago. Herding animals.
So it sounds like the guys kind of want to be in their man cave, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. I've really studied it many times. I talk to my wife about it often, you know, just sitting having your coffee in the morning. And I'm like, you know, I mean, some of them, especially your more analytical types, your engineers, they like a process. Even some of the more introverted type people like being in a group and occasionally sharing. It's the ones that are just so gregarious and outgoing that they feel like they, you know, they don't need a group. But I tell a lot of people this. I said, you know, if you think back to, you know, when we were brought to the earth, you know, God saw Adam sitting out there and he said, you know what? It's not good for, you need somebody. You need some company. Now, that didn't always turn out for every guy out in the universe, but we've got company and women are there, and we should be in community. We need other people. I mean, I think COVID taught us that. I mean, suicide rates went sky high, drug use went sky high. People were the pet world went crazy because people were like, okay, if I can't talk to anybody, I'm gonna at least get a dog or a cat. And all these people adopted animals. We need one another. We need a type of community. So mm-hmm. when guys are fighting that, I feel bad for them because I tell them, sure, okay, you're watching The Walking Dead tonight and it's big episode, but mm-hmm. Accountability wise, you committed to group and to share in group, to be present, to be accountable, and it's only once a week. So mm-hmm. use your stinking DVR or whatever and tape it and come back and watch it later.
Do you ever feel like you have to use some of your sales experience to kind of convince these guys or even maybe some of the women that are harder to get involved?
Yeah. I won't say I negotiate with them, but I do share the word that first off, like anything, there was a reason that you decided that you wanted to get in a group to begin with. Mm-hmm. Don't lose sight of that reason. There's so many factors that influence our happiness these days, and people don't realize it. Like, I can go to the airport and I can see everybody just staring at their phone. They're either doing a selfie or they're looking at Facebook or they're posting something. Or they're looking at Poshmark to see what's the latest sales word or face, mm-hmm. So it just goes on and on. And there's just so many things that distracts us from being truly happy. I mean, God help us if the internet ever went down, because, mm-hmm. you think about it, you wouldn't have X or Twitter. You wouldn't have TikTok. You wouldn't have Facebook. I mean, mm-hmm. I think some people would just literally go crazy. And, mm-hmm. The other night I was watching it's a guy show, it was kind of bloody. My wife's like, why do you watch that? I can't watch that. I go, well, you don't watch it anyway. You look at your phone all night. You're really not watching my show. So what I'll have to watch a romance comedy, mm-hmm. when you're not going to really watch it at all. So, mm-hmm. but that's just how people are tied into their phones. And I have to negotiate with them to put your phones away or leave them in the car just for an hour and a half to share and be there, be committed to the people that are in the room and listen to them. You want everybody to listen to you. So, like I say, quit asking for blessings and be a blessing to others. So instead of, just you thinking about yourself and your phone. Mm-hmm. Because if you got into any kind of, where I kind of leverage it, I say, if you've got into any kind of issues that you needed to talk to someone about, then you'd mm-hmm. want to have someone that you know you can share those issues with. Mm-hmm. Like a buddy of mine got into a car accident the other day, and he called me and he said, hey, man, do you think it'd be possible for you to come over and just give me a ride? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But if you're single and you're living in an apartment, you may not have the connections built where you can easily do that. You'd have to Uber, mm-hmm. but if you had a group, you might be able to call someone. Mm-hmm. And that's why I tell them, I say, you need to be tied in somehow. Some mm-hmm. people, I live in San Antonio, we're a military city. A lot of people who are here, they don't have family here. They're here because they're in the service. They're at BAMC, the medical center here, or they're at the Air Force, the Lackland or Randolph Air Force Base. So, they don't have their family here, and it's nice to be connected.
And for you, I know being connected with your mother was a very big thing growing up, because I believe she inspired you a lot. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about your relationship with your mom.
Well, my mom's great. She's almost 100 now, and she's still driving and doing her checkbook.
It's good to hear.
So she's just I talk to her every day. She lives in Alabama, but she's very much a very strong Christian woman, reads her Bible every day, prays. She's ready. She goes, I'm ready to go anytime, but not necessarily ready to go. She goes, I just bought a big box of cereal at Sam's. So, I mean, she's always thinking about she's always had a great sense of humor. And I think that that's part of being happy, is having that great sense of humor. She always supported me. Her biggest phrase was, you can do anything you set your mind to do. Mm. That was always her phrase, where where my dad was like, well, you can't do that. You know, you don't know anything about that, you know. But my mom was to say that at the drop of a hat. And it gave me confidence. I think it would give any kid confidence. And I really feel for kids growing up that don't have at least one supportive parent, you know, or even, you know, somebody in the family like grandparents that are real supportive. Some types of families or even ethnic origin, you know, they have it in their makeup to mm-hmm. always be supportive and respectful of their families. But in some families in America, we're kind of getting away from that. And it's almost it's almost a crime to not be more adjoined. And not just having them live together. Like my mom just moved my mom here just a few months ago in with my brother. Mm-hmm. And not because we needed to, but we were just worried about her. Mm-hmm. Not that she needed us worrying about her. She was fine. But, you know, you wonder when you're close to 100, okay, when's it going to be when she has that one fall? And then we would have to all drop everything and rush to her side. So we moved her in with him. And I was just talking to him on the phone, and he just loves it. Because he said, man, we come home and everything's clean. He goes, nothing goes unwashed. she wants to iron everything, including my underwear. I was like, you know, she's just always been so supportive. And I feel for anyone that doesn't have that support. I mean, it's just great. So, yeah.
You mentioned how people aren't as close anymore, especially like, I guess, in the United States. Do you think a lot of that, you've mentioned religion a few times. Do you think a lot of that is because people maybe, you know, aren't necessarily following their spiritual practices anymore? And so it's not keeping, like, I guess that it's not being that glue that's kind of keeping the community together.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's several facets to that. One of those major pinpoints that I've seen is a lot of times religion separates us from truth and grace. You know, from a religious factor, you could always say that's true and you shouldn't be doing that. But from a grace factor, you know, if you look at how Jesus never slammed anyone, you know, just put it in their back in their face and threw it at them like some people do, you mm-hmm. know, like a coach might slap a kid up the side of the head and say, what are you, stupid? You know, it was always a story and it was always in support. Now, he didn't champion them. He didn't say that was right. But like the woman at the well, I mean, he's like, oh, where's your husband? You know, and she's at the well at midday when it's hot and nobody goes out nobody's there during the midday, so nobody would bother her. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I don't have a husband. He goes, oh, yes, you do. You have, what was it, four or five?
Yeah, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you know me, you know. And but he didn't slap her around for that. He wasn't mean to her. He everything he said was in truth and grace. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of times these days, the reason the non-denominational churches are growing so big, and I go to one of those here in San Antonio, and it's now become the largest church in San Antonio. I mean, over 60% of our congregation is now Catholic, or was Catholic, and I think and a lot of them are Methodists. So I think you see a lot of these churches where they put this religious barrier up to say, if you don't follow these rules, which, by the way, were man-made rules, then you're not doing right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people also come into the non-denominational churches because they want to be closer to the Savior and they want to be closer to the Bible and they want to know the Bible, which mm-hmm. is God's, you know, breathed word. So, yeah, I think a big part of that is just focusing on the spiritual aspect of the Holy Bible and our mm-hmm. our Savior versus putting a wall of religion in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a particular story came to mind. I think it's in the Gospel of Mark. I could be wrong. It's the scene where there's this person, I guess he's like possessed by a demon or something, and
yes.
he ends up meeting Christ, And he tells Christ to kind of take the demon out of him. And Christ's advice was basically like, go be with your family.
Exactly. Yeah. And it, and I think he went, the demon went to into a pig.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. And the pig jumped off a cliff or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Jesus always had a way of speaking. Like I say, there's two types of, I mean, there's speaking in truth, which is not necessarily love, because you can be talking in truth, but basically telling the person that in the same way that that was stupid or that you're wrong. And nobody wants to hear that. But people will hear you if you tell it in the form of a story or just a little bit more about, you know, the idea behind it. And you listen more than talking. So I've got, we've got a rule in our groups that the leader or facilitator does 10% of the talking, and everybody, they should be engaging everyone to talk and you listen. So
in these discussions that you're having with youth, are you talking about things like anger management? I think I remember reading about yep. that. Mm-hmm. How do you teach them to deal with anger? Because I know, especially when you're a teenager, anger is like that one that you'll kind of choose a lot of the times.
Yeah. I mean, the two tenets that I've seen the most, and this is not just youth, but my, you know, my groups are 30 to 40 year olds, and the 30 and 40 year olds of today are not at all like the ones when I was growing up, because a lot of them still are at home. They're still not really focused on where they want their career to be. They're trying to figure out how to be more happy, how to be more fulfilled. So they're really searching. I know when I was like 15, 16, I was doing like 4 or 5 yards a week. I'd already earned enough to buy my own car before I was 16. I mean, and I knew I was going to get pushed out of the nest. I mean, my dad was ready for me to go, I think, when I hit 15. and I only had one other brother. I mean, I guess I was really that bad, but, or that ugly, one of the two, but you know, it was kind of pushed. I knew I was going to be pushed out. And some of these 30 to 40s are still living at home and looking for that. So, you know, when I was talking to them about depression and, you know, going back to drugs or alcohol or just thinking about suicide, I said, you know, I really believe that there's two tenets to focus on. You need to be successful. You need to, you know, stay in Christ, and you need to set the correct expectations. And, you know, they were encouraging me to write a book, and that's why I wrote the book, Great Expectations for Today. Mm. So if you're not setting those expectations up for success and happiness, then you will flow in to anger. That will become part of your life. And living in Military City, I run into and have a lot of people in my groups that are form, you know, have PTSD, and you know, from PTSD comes a lot of anger. So I put a couple of chapters in my book about how to deal with anger, because it's I think the first part is setting the right expectations and then dealing with that anger and asking yourself questions like, okay, why am I angry? Am I happier because I've gotten angry? And like I tell the story, one night I took my family to a movie, and it was in a hurry because of course we were late to the movie, and I was rushing around trying to get them in and get a ticket. I didn't even want to go to the movie. It was like a kid's movie. And I said, y'all go on and get the movie. I'll take care of everything. And as I had parked right in front of the theater where they could go in, well, As I got out in the haste, one of the kids locked the door to the truck, and it was moving. It was running. I went in and just, you know, made a couple, you know, said, hey, I'm so sorry to the manager. I locked the kids, you know, I told the story, and then she started laughing. She goes, this happened before. It really has. It happened several times. And she goes, I always get the sheepish fathers that come in and talk about, oh God, never happened to me before. So anyway, I had to call the locksmith. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, this guy came up and he was really mad because he wanted to part. His wife was they were in a hurry and they were trying to get to a spot, and he was a veteran and he had a handicap sticker. Well, I really wasn't blocking him. It was just harder for him to get around me and get in the handicap space. Mm. And matter of fact, I thought I was like at least 15, 20 feet away, but he was just mad that he couldn't make a wide circle and come in. So he came in and he sat at the bar, which is really funny because now these movie theaters, they have bars, they serve alcohol. So he's sitting there and he started drinking. He just started saying, I wish I knew that who belonged to that truck. I would kick his butt. And he was just like, and I kept apologizing to the manager. She said, don't worry about it. That he comes in here a lot. And and I said, well, I feel so bad. And she goes, well, nothing to do about it. He's just a mean person, a mad person. So I talk about ways to deal with anger, but I talk first about ways of setting your expectations. Like when you go out on a date or you go to a party, or you get in traffic, or you know you're going to work and you know there's going to be traffic. So why would you expect anything less? Why do you get mad when there's traffic, when you know every day that there's traffic? So just doing a better job of writing your goal down, setting your expectations, and living to those set expectations.
And I imagine that helps with stress too, because if you already are kind of comfortable with the idea that there's going to be traffic, you won't be stressed when you're maybe running late.
Yeah. And that's another thing I talk about in the book, is that stress, you know, a lot of people are doing drugs or alcohol or talking about suicide all because of stress. Either they have stress and they haven't learned to deal with it, or they're imagining stress. Like, you know, I have, on my groups, everybody is together in a group me chat. So each group has a name and there are usually 12 to 15 people per group. So during the week, I'm on all the group me's that I've ever started. So I've got about 28 groups and I see their chat, and what they're talking about is, oh my gosh, tomorrow I'm going in to meet the new boss. Please pray for me because this or that. I'm really worried about this or that. And here the whole time we've been talking about how to de-stress your life with just, you know, setting the proper expectations and feeling confident that, you know, things are going to work out. So, you know, it's not a short synopsis. It's just something that I've found that this age group really deals with a lot, and a lot of it's brought on themselves for, you know, I mean, sometimes I know in a lot of cases, even parents are enablers, but because it's, whatever little Johnny wants, we can provide, but it's not always the smartest thing. So, sometimes I have to meet with the parents too and talk to them about what's going on.
Yeah. And I think when parents do that, they kind of fail in teaching their kids like grit and perseverance. That, you know, sometimes things aren't going to go the way that you originally planned, and you kind of just need to stick in there. You know?
Yeah, they've got to learn to. I mean, it's like a little baby walking or crawling, and then they start to walk. They kind of go up to a chair and they kind of put one hand after the other and they start shaking and pulling themselves up. And then one day they start walking from that chair, but they've got to do that. And if you're sitting there going, oh, here, let me help you up or let me hold you, they're never going to learn to walk, much less run or jump or enjoy life. Yeah. So, you know, that's tough.
Yeah. And I think sometimes our school system doesn't teach kids certain like skills that they need, like time management, for example.
Right.
Like, I think that's such a big skill that people just, I think, don't always have. I know it was something that I had to learn when I got into the workforce. Like, how do you manage, you know, 20 different tasks at the same time?
Right, right. Yeah, that and having goals laid out to achieve. I mean, one thing I talk to them about is I've got my goals written down in a notebook. And every 6 months I go through kind of update them, because hey, I've set the goals and I've focused on them, but I don't always achieve them. Or sometimes instead of a 6 month period, it may take 8 or 12 or 24 months, but I'm still focused on it. And the reason you write them down is so you can look at them and focus on them. And again, you're setting the expectations that you're going to succeed, you know, Warren Buffett said, you know, you can get to an investment where you get to a point where you say, I'm going to cut it loose. because it didn't work out. But everybody needs to learn that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I know you have a second book coming out, I believe in April. It's called Side Hustle 101. So what's that book going to be about?
My whole life, I've always worked and done the counseling, and I've always had a side business. And I make a real delineation of side hustle, because you got to have a rainy day fund. You've got to have your day job. Your day job is the ocean that floats all boats. If you don't have your day job, then nobody's sailing. Okay. So, you know, you want that day job and those benefits, but I've always had an interest in separate businesses, and I've had an investing business for funds, and I've had an investing business for real estate, and I've done different types of real estate, and I kind of put together a formula for success, and to date, I haven't had any like serious failures. I've had, you know, some close calls, but I've learned through, you know, mentorship and prayer and planning that, you know, I mean, there are some things that I didn't pull the trigger on, luckily. Okay. My blessing is that crypto is finally coming back. It's way up this year, so I'm happy about that. But the idea is that there is a formula, and you really need to plan to have any kind of side business. And it can't wreck your day job or your family. If you have a family, you have to consider all those things. And that's what I'm writing about.
Do you ever counsel people in terms of like let's say you have average Joe, he goes to his 9-to-5 job, but he's like kind of interested in maybe starting a side business or side hustle? Do you ever counsel about that? Like what maybe steps they should take?
Well, definitely. Because of my groups, the 30 or 40s, a lot of them are trying to do some things and they ask me because I've been in sales management for some time. You know, they ask just questions or resources. And, you know, my big thing is that, you know, you should always have several mentors in your business. I mean, Warren Buffett's mentor was Charlie Munger, basically his partner, but he listened to Charlie like crazy because he always said the smartest things. And even though they were good friends and they talked a lot about business, it was, you know, he trusted him and he knew that he was a smarter man. He always admitted that. We should reach out and ask, because, you know, I had a friend not too long ago, about 3 years ago, he didn't ask me about a business. He went into a business. Mm-hmm. And then when he was in the business, he was having problems. And I said, well, why did you start the business? He goes, well, because I sold my company and I wanted to retire. And I thought this would be a good. I said, well, why did you think it would be good? He goes, I just thought it would be great. And I said, did you ask anybody? No, not really. It's my idea. I said, did you pray about it? No, not really. But I knew it'd be a good idea. And I go, well, did you give a business plan? No, not really. But I mean, in my mind, I do. And I said, well, is it going pretty good? He goes, no, not really. So, I mean, you know, I was like, whoa, you didn't ask anyone. I mean, I would at least gone into that type of business. Like, let's just say, I don't want to pin him down. Let's just say the landscaping. I would have gone and talked to several landscaping owners or company managers and say, you know, what do you really like about this business? What is it you really hate about this business? Mm-hmm. You know, to find out what you want to do, what you want. How is your pricing? Where have you had success? Where have you had failure? You know, what areas do you like in the city? I mean, there's just so much you can get from somebody that already owns a business that you're thinking about. So, you know, if somebody's willing to listen, then, you know, talk to them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think even one of the biggest lessons that I had to kind of learn in life is that, like, don't try to go at it alone. Like, you're so much better off, and you increase your odds of success when you have a team pushing you behind you, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, we're all brought up in certain ways. And I think a lot of Americans are brought up like myself, like my mom saying, you can do anything you set your mind to. But sometimes that overpowers what our true thought process should be of talking to other people that are doing that business. Because I've talked to some people with business I thought I wanted to get into, and they're like, oh, hell no, you don't want to do that. Like the restaurant business is terrible. And it's dependent on, you know, service workers. And most of those service workers today, when I've talked to friends of mine, they say, yeah, a lot of them on drugs. A lot of them have had, you know, problems. A lot of this, a lot of that. You're lucky to hold them for 6 weeks. It's a continual hiring nightmare. And I've had several friends and family members that have owned restaurants, and then find it's kind of like a boat. You're happiest the day you bought it and the day you sold it.
Another thing I think a lot of people struggle with is this word success. I think especially these days, because the internet, there's a lot out there about what success actually is and should mean. You know, sometimes you have gurus telling you, you know, if you don't make X amount of dollars, you're not successful. If you don't have X amount of friends, you're not successful. So in your opinion, what is success?
In my opinion, success is being happy, very happy at where you're at any point in time with what you're doing. Are you fulfilled? Are you satisfied that you're in this business, and are you happy with what you're doing with it and how it's growing for you? That is all part of setting the right expectations. Because again, as Americans, we think we can do anything, and we think we should be able to do it quick because, you know, again, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, they're all saying, oh yeah, we did this, we did that, 6 months. Well, you know, not everybody's an expert on everything. So you really have to rein in those expectations and define what success is to you. Because if you're working a full-time job, you got a family, and you start a side hustle, how many hours a week are you going to really be able to work on that side hustle and what's going on? Versus if you didn't have anything but that, could you do? And I can guarantee you, if you just had that, you'd focus on it. But then you'd have to say, well, how much money is it going to make? And am I happy? Is it successful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think another thing that sometimes you have to consider is, like, is what you think is success what God thinks is success? Because I think sometimes we jump on a bandwagon and we think we're successful, but then, you know, you know, you might read your Bible and you realize, oh, you know, I've actually been going down the wrong path my whole life.
Yeah, you know, that's I've had this conversation many times with my groups, because especially when we talk about tithing, we at our church, we do a 90-day tithing test. And we tell them, if you commit this much to tithing, if it doesn't come back to you in many times over, in a 90-day period, we'll give you your original tithe back. Wow. And the reason we do that is because, you know, the Bible says it's through the happy heart of the giver that makes it a tithe. And if someone's not tithing, you know, that's all about faith. And, you know, as our pastor says, you don't give to a church, you give through a church. So our church is debt free. I think over 30% of our money was given to the community in San Antonio. And then we have a missions project. But, you know, you just really have to think of what's going on out there and biblically, you know, what you're doing to align with that, because, I mean, we're here to spread the word of Jesus Christ, and you can't do that by just truth. You have to do it in grace and love. And, cause there's just so many people out there trying to taking us on a really curved road to say, well, this is like the Bible and this is like the Bible. But when you read it and you really know what you're reading, you're like, okay, that is not like the Bible. Jesus Christ doesn't condone a lot of behaviors that doesn't condone any behaviors that are not biblically supported. So, but love is one and grace is one.
And so, you know, having traveled a lot and spoken to all these people and helped people, what have you learned about life?
Well, I've learned that everybody has their own opinion. Like joints in the body, they've got more than one opinion. And those opinions are usually impressed upon them by something in their past. And the Bible doesn't change. It's never changed. God's word has always been the same. Our universe has changed. I mean, I can just look at, I'll give you an experiment. If anybody listening, go look in your closet. Look at your clothes. I can go in my closet and I've got like 40 ties. I haven't worn a tie in about 20 years now. I don't have any suits in my closet anymore. I've got mostly very comfortable clothes, which I love. But my wife's like, sometimes we'll watch an old show or we'll see a sports documentary back from the 50s and 60s, and everybody was wearing a suit and tie in the stands and even hats. You never see anybody wearing, and fedoras are coming back now. But, you know, when my dad passed, he lived to 94, he still had those really thin ties. Because he was Depression era, he never threw anything away. But he also had the really thick ties, wide ties. People don't, our capitalist society, we don't make money unless people are buying new things. Mm-hmm. They're buying new cars or buying new clothes or buying new shoes. So those things are continually changing. And I have to laugh because when we look at our, you know, our Creator and we look at His Word, it's never changed. It's always the same, but it still applies today. Mm. And I don't think that will ever change. Like I would have never thought that we would be debating if you're a girl or a guy. I would have never thought that would have been in question. I mean, there's some crazy things that are in question, but I never thought that would be one. Mm. Or if men can menstruate, or if men can have babies. I mean, this world can be so crazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the drugs, and then you look at what happened with the fentanyl. You know, we had a friend of ours whose son got his prescription, and it came in, and he took it, and he died because somebody had laced
Sorry
it
to
with
hear
fentanyl.
That.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just the world will always be crazy. You've always got people that are greedy and they're looking for more, 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 one way or the other. I mean, if it wasn't that way, George Soros would not have been so successful. He's been successful in, you know, basically for almost the fall of America from a crime and, you know, political perspective. He's funded all these things and he's got the money to. But if people weren't greedy, they would say, no, that's not right. If they were moral, they would say, no, that's not right. Mm-hmm. So the Bible points to all these things about moral, immoral, right and wrong, punishment, crime. I mean, there's over, more than anything in the Bible, money is mentioned, I think it's over 3,200 times or something like that. It's incredible. So it talks about, you know, don't be in debt. This is a big tenet of the Bible. When you're in debt, you're a slave to the master, whoever you owe that to. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's tough for anybody to swallow, but mm-hmm. our society lives like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just, that's kind of what I've learned. And by the way, everybody's got some debt. I've learned that too. Besides greed, everybody's got debt. Some type.
Yeah. So it's kind of like embrace the change around you, or at least be aware of it, but ultimately hang on to that one anchor, which is God.
Yes, definitely so.
All right, Daryl, my last question for you. What advice would you give to a young individual that's interested in pursuing the same kind of work that you do?
Well, I would say a focus on you know, the broad area of you know, what you could do to counsel others. I think more than anything today, we need Christian counselors. We don't just need counselors. There are so many counselors out there that have not been successful. I mean, why do we still have rampant drug addiction, abuse, you know, everything that we've got? Why has it gotten so bad? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've missed a big bubble of curing people that are on drugs, alcohol. So our church is going like crazy. And I think there are many. So I think that if you're interested in counseling, you've got to get the education, but look at Christian counseling and then more focus it on maybe age groups. In my book, I call out Dr. Cloud and Dr. Townsend. We in our church, we teach their courses. There's a great course called Safe People that helps you know, learn who a safe person is. Let you know if you're a safe person. There's a course called Boundaries. But Dr. Cloud and Dr. Townsend, they've written about 7 or 8 books, everything from grace to love to happiness. But they're a psychiatrist, but they're biblical. Matter of fact, they make their living going around and talking, counseling with pastors of churches. I mean, I can't imagine being a pastor of a church, because it's just got to be. But during their sessions, you can see they're talking to a group of pastors and their wives to figure out, okay, what are you doing right? What are you doing wrong? You know, how are you figuring this out as you deal with all your congregants and still live, you know, in the life of Christ? So I would tell somebody to, on Right Now Media, you can watch most of those courses, Safe People. You can watch Boundaries. You can watch Changes That Heal. And those are great courses that they deliver. And that would be a good start for anyone that wants to start. Our church, we teach those courses for free, but every quarter there's a huge sign-up list, and they fill up within about 30 minutes. Oh, wow. People calling in and on the internet, they're registering. They're going, hey, what? I haven't got accepted yet, you know, and they're just waiting. And but we've got, like I said, we have about 24,000 people attending every weekend, 5 services. So it's tough. So
yeah. Good turnout, though.
Yeah, it's a great turnout. We had 620 baptisms last weekend. Wow. Yeah, 620. So the angels were ringing the bells.
All right, Daryl, before I let you go, where can people find you online or connect with you?
Yeah, you could send me an email at dtanner03@yahoo.com. Also on Amazon's Kindle or Amazon, my book is Great Expectations Today by D. Tanner. It's just the initial D. And I've got my connection there also.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Daryl, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Penner. Really appreciate it.
All right, have a good one. Okay.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Curious Expression Podcast. Hit that subscribe button now to ensure that you don't miss out on any future guests.